Hey there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, we hope you enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. Today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about pacing versus your player energy. How can you manage when your players drive too fast or too slow to a finale, especially in a one-off convention game? How much should the DM shape the tempo? All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Before we get into it, I will remind everyone, as always, at the end of the show, we will be hosting our After Party Chat. That is a live video chat that Dan and I host on our Discord server, and you can join in by becoming a patron. Just visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, pledge at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our Discord server. Get your account set up over there before the end of the show, and about maybe 10 minutes after, we will be there to talk to you all live.
We love that. Our patrons are fantastic, such as Backweus, who's checking in that we are currently live on Twitch, YouTube, and Restreambot. I said that right this time. Thank you so much for checking in that we are, in fact, live everywhere we want. So, Paul, I thought this was a great topic about managing the pacing of your D&D or other role-playing game. I mean, I know, I've said this before, I struggle with this quite a bit, and I'm routinely embarrassed at myself going over time. But what was on your mind to bring this up this week?
You know, I think you and I talk about it quite a lot, but usually in passing as a secondary part of whatever the main topic of the day is. I feel like pacing is crucially important pretty much in any role playing game. And I was just yesterday running a game of Quest using the pre-written module, the Black Worm of Brandensford. I think that was the name of it. Am I getting that right? Maybe. Nice. Yes, the Black Worm of Brandensford. A great, great, great adventure. It's you get it on drive-through. I think there's a link in the description. It's written for BX. It's real nice. It has a kind of overland map. You start in the small town that's being terrorized by a dragon, and like that's the main hook. There's a dragon out there. Caravans aren't coming into town anymore because they're being terrorized by the dragon. Please go take care of the dragon. So it has a very solid hook of this dragon. But then there's a ton of other stuff going on, right? There's interesting, NPCs in town who have their own personal issues happening. The forest itself is full of kind of all kinds of interesting encounters and whatnot. Basically, because no people have been going out into the forest, it's sort of being taken back over by the Fae. So there's all kinds of interesting encounters and things to do in the forest, many of which have nothing to do with the dragon, right? So it's okay. A very kind of sandboxy sort of adventure of, make mm-hmm. of it what you will. But also, cool, kill a dragon. That's fun. And I found out about this module through Fear of a Black Dragon. And so just prior to running it, so the night before running it, I was re-listening to the Fear of a Black Dragon episode, and then after the fact, I'm thinking about what Jason and Tom were talking about on that show versus my experience and how radically, diametrically opposed they were, but in the same way. And they both had pacing problems, right? So Jason tells a story of how basically his group discovered the dragon almost immediately, like just stumbled upon the dragon, whoops, and then killed it. And he was like, okay, what? And so their whole half back of their show is them talking about what do you do if the players do the thing immediately? How do you, what do you do? Right? Do you just end the game? Do you do something else? How do you deal with that kind of surprise outcome? Which is unusual. I think more often we see the other side, which is what I saw, which is my players got stuck into all many side plots. They were really enjoying exploring the town and then exploring some of the woods and whatnot. Never really got very near the dragon, and within the last half hour they were like, well, we really should do something about that dragon thing. And so they started down a plan that I knew was going to bring them to an area that basically included a little dungeon area with 20 keyed locations, And I went, oh gosh, we have 30 minutes left and they're about to go someplace with 20 locations that isn't even the dragon. Right? And I'm like, we don't have time for that, right? That's, we can't do that. And right, and I don't want to stomp on their, you know, ideas, and I want to be like, guys, you really shouldn't do that. Maybe pick something else. That's that, right, pulling them out of the fiction in that way, in that hard way, and just saying like, I suggest you don't do that plan. Sucks. Right. But on the other hand, I gotta wrap up. Like, people have to leave. Right? There's time constraints, real world time constraints here. I can't just let them. I mean, I guess I could. That's an option, right? I guess I could just let them go in and then be like, all right, well, your half hour's up. Sorry, everyone. You got into the second room. There's still a lot more here. The end. So anyway, that was what was in my mind of sort of like fascinating the skills that the DM has to have in hand and the tools they need ready for both accelerating and decelerating the play or recovering when the players just happen to bumble through the content real fast. Have you ever experienced that angle, Dan? Have you had players just do the thing?
I'm so glad this... It took me a day to think. I mean, it's wild because this didn't immediately pop in my head. I'm so glad you're asking because that actually is what I've been dealing with at the end of my Star Frontiers campaign currently. Is I've been running through this Valtarnis campaign, classic from the 80s. And at the end, it kind of turns into this climax, this rather large war game, actually. And there are four episodes that kind of close it. And I was running, I guess this was like two sessions ago, and I was running the first of the four, and what dawned on me, because I know I've run into this when I ran it 40 years ago, but what I forgot was that three out of the four episodes have a load-bearing key boss or something like that, that if you eliminate, all their soldiers run away and the encounter is over and you've won. And what I forgot about is that, and you know, they were writing these things quickly. I think this is a big complicated set piece. I don't think they had a lot of time to play test this particular session. And what I forgot is that you can trivially eliminate the load bearing key on the first round in three out of these four scenarios. And and so I'm running it, right? I set up all these pieces, a big battle map and a bunch of soldiers on this side and a bunch of aliens, and describe this. And our lead guy with a heavy laser just kabam, just wipes out the thing on the first shot. They get initiative. On the very first shot, they take out the thing, and by the book, the episode is over. And so and all of a sudden my brain went, oh, right. Right, that's right. That's a thing in the way that this is written, that happens in most of the sessions here. And so on the fly, I had to pick a second chair, right? Of like, oh, okay, so in my mind, you're going to have to kill A and B. It's not just A. You also have to eliminate B to finish it. And then, weirdly, my players did not want to attack B. And then all of a sudden, the session was going too long. It was going on and on because my players absolutely didn't want to attack B for some reason. And then I had to, as I was doing this on the fly, I went, okay, well, you have to kill A and then B or C. And I picked a third thing that if you eliminate this, that also counted as the second thing. And that finally happened. So I've actually dealt with both. And then having just in the last couple of weeks. Yes. And then after the fact, I was at, right, I got to go rewrite these in advance so I'm not surprised by it. Because, right, they have this flaw that you can eliminate them in the first round in most of these episodes. So I have dealt with that just recently.
I mean, that's, and I think, like, what you're talking about, right, is that and I think what we're going to focus on probably in this conversation is sort of those off-the-cuff, like, how do you... When you are surprised as DM, and the players do something, and you just have to adapt the adventure right then and there, what kind of changes can you make without having been prepared, right? For certainly what you're talking about is like, oh, now I'm going to go back and write notes and be prepared for next time. But let's assume there is no next time, right?
Yeah.
How do you deal with it in the moment? And I want to, the other aspect of this I want to bring up and touch on a little bit is, and this kind of came up in the chat here, is the context of the game you're running matters a lot, right? So if this is a one shot, especially if this is like a convention game where you're running with a bunch of strangers you're never going to see again, that is very different from if this is part of your ongoing campaign. And just to hook into last week's conversation, if you're playing West Marches, that also matters. And the reason I say that is because oftentimes in West Marches, there's the conceit of they all go back to town before the session is over.
Yep.
Sometimes you're not in a great place to make that happen, and it feels very forced and weird. Now, in my case, I had kind of the worst of all three situations. I was playing with this new group that I've been playing with, and I have it in the back of my head of like, maybe this could evolve into a campaign. Maybe we'll play it West March's style, but I don't know. We're here to play one session and find out if we all vibe and if this is going to be a good group or not.
Right.
Right. So in the moment, I can't even answer if this is a one shot or not. I'm like, I don't. Maybe the answer is maybe it may be a one shot or it might be multiple. We might do a continuation. And if we do a continuation, it might be West March's. So no answers to any of those.
It seemed like
all for all cases.
It seemed like in that, without it being a convention, it sounds like, and a lot, that's a lot on my mind is you just have this one single session you're going to have with these players. Although your situation wasn't a convention, this first play session sounded like a trial, sounds to me like a trial run for a group that's new to D&D. And in that situation, you want to give them a full beginning, middle, and ending to kind of give them a taste of what the whole experience is like with D&D. So I think to my mind, very similar.
I agree. But also I think as we were getting there, and especially this hit me in that last half hour, right? As they're coming up with this plan to do this thing that I know is not possible. That it just can't fit in the time.
Yeah.
Right. As they're coming up with that, we're in the last half hour. So at that point I have enough information to go, yeah, this was fun. This is a cool group. I would like to play some more with them. Right.
Okay.
So I'm both one incentivized to say like, well, maybe it's okay if they don't do all of the things or hit the giant climax. Maybe that's okay because that's a hook to bring them back. But I do want to give them something. I don't want it to just end flatly with a like, oh, well, better come and play again, guys, because, you know, you only made it to the second room. Walk away.
And I'll just pitch another situation that occurs to me where this is important is for my Star Frontiers game, I have been using miniatures very heavily. So I lay out a battle map. I have customized miniatures for players. And this has been getting more and more elaborate as the campaign's going on. So like I say, these last couple of sessions, like sometimes there's been like one particular location. And then these last sessions have had just a ton of miniatures on the map. And I don't want to have to come back and reset it up. This is at somebody else's place. I can't leave it set up for multiple weeks while we're off. And so it's a situation where I really don't want to end it mid-fight or in this particular location and then have to come back, redraw it, set it up again. So I really, for these kinds of possibly complicated battle map set pieces, I do want to have it set up, done, complete, clean it up by the end of that particular session. I feel myself grappling with this exact same issue as a result of that.
I think what where we'll land here probably is in all these cases, ultimately, you're going to have to change the content, right? You're going to have to go off book. You're going to have to change what exists. And the funny thing for me is when we talk about, like, say, one shots, I almost think the problem is easier. If you're at a convention, and you just know this game is going to end in half an hour and I'm never going to see these people again, I am much more willing to be way more violent with the content, right? In this particular case, had I been in the exact same situation, but I'm at a convention, well, for sure the dragon would just come crashing through the woods at that point. Boom, dragon's here. Fight him, right? Why not? And in fact, when I was mentioning this topic this morning to Tanya, she brought up the birthday game, which we live streamed, and you can see me do it right then and there. In the live stream game, you guys get into the underground area, and there's supposed to be this whole giant lake with, like, you have to cross the lake and get to an island, and then there's a building on an island with a whole bunch of key locations, and eventually deep down in there is the horrible dragon. And I was like, we don't have time for that. I guess I'm rewriting. And so I said, I guess the lizard folk have a shaman who's doing some kind of summoning ritual right here at the bank of the lake, and the dragon's gonna come up. Right? I just kind of plucked
literally
elements of what would be fun. And that's you can watch the stream. That's exactly what happens. And I think I pulled it
off. You're dropping a lot of black dragons and a lot of players. I didn't actually. You did it well. It was synthetic enough. I actually couldn't tell immediately that it was that was a cut and paste. So good job. I feel like I normally can. Frankly, I feel like when DMs do a lot of weird stuff behind the screens, I feel like I can normally detect it. So good job on making that look very synthetic to my eye.
What do you think, Dan? Let me ask your advice here. Knowing the situation I was in, they're out in the woods hunting a dragon who's nowhere nearby. They come up with a plan for here's a step we could take towards defeating the dragon, which is going to lead them to a lot more content that has nothing to do with the dragon. You're hoping that the game will be a to be continued, so you're not really inclined to necessarily say like, boom, dragon time. What else? What other options do we have at this point?
Interesting. Okay, so I mean, if at that point I was convinced that there was going to be a campaign, I do tend to wrap it early. I don't think I've ever had anybody give me grief for wrapping a session early, which is actually something I had to do in my last session. We had a big set piece. We had an hour to go. I wasn't going to get another one. I said, this is a good place to give you a little teaser. I'll give you a little teaser of what you're confronting next time. And then we'll end. Nobody tends to mind that, frankly. If you absolutely, definitely had to.
Wait, I want to pick that one apart a little bit, because that's actually great advice. And also, I think really good for, and I think one of the things that the Fear of a Black Dragon guys said of like, what happens if they kill the dragon right away? Just end, right? Is certainly an option. Great. Yeah. Well done, guys. You did it way faster than I was expecting. That was super fun. I've done this at a convention too, where there was like a good hour left. And then I gave the players the option. I said, well, you're pretty much done. You did the thing. Well done. We keep playing. You could explore the space some more. There is other interesting things here. But you did just do the climax, right? And I just outright told them, here's where we're at. What's everyone feeling? What do you want to do?
Yeah. I think I was there. Yeah, you're right. I think I was there when that last time that happened for you. And I was happy they wanted to keep playing because I was going to be running the next bad guy that they were about to run into. So I was personally happy they said yes. But I think that's a point when you get to that high point where you can pull the cover back. I do think that's perfectly fine. Not something I would have done decades ago, frankly, but I think that's a great point to pull the cover back in, say that, if you want a denouement, if you want to chat about it, if you want to, keep adventuring and to get some consent about what happened next. I'll say, my current, for what it's worth, my current improv coach, right, and I'm sure everybody would agree, recommends cutting a scene earlier rather than later. If you can find an emotionally hot moment, you'd prefer to cut it off there than to experience the slow degradation of the energy level. So, I think for a lot of reasons, that's a really top option.
I'm curious, because the other thing I keep thinking of is like in your case where you had the players, one shot the load bearing boss. Did you consider in the moment, fudge it? He's immune to lasers. He's got twice as many hit points. Something, just so that he doesn't die in one shot.
Okay, So a little bit. What I actually did was it's a heavy vehicle with two enemy driver operators, and so actually what I did do was you've overturned it instead of just blowing it up. Oh, we have cats on the show. Fantastic.
Yeah. So sorry, Lydia's very once her presence known. She has opinions about this, Dan. She doesn't like this.
I'm sorry if you disagree with this. I apologize. So what I said was, instead of just blowing it up, you've overturned the thing. The two operators have been thrown out, and there's another vehicle coming over, a big robot that's actually going to flip it back into operation and get it back in action. Now, before I could get to the next round, my players also shot the two operators dead. So I was losing real hard, and that's why I stepped in and said, oh well, you also have to eliminate this other thing that's actually a lot more durable that I do have on the map at the moment. Was my option. I tend to not I would really be bothered by just flat out fiat saying the thing that just happened didn't happen. So I think I would tend to come in with there's another reason why that didn't end the episode.
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's cases, right, where you could do like you just they, and again I'm making assumptions here, but like if the laser shot just did so much damage that it kills him in one shot, you know, if you're very quick on it, you could just be like, got double the hit points. Okay, great. He took the laser shot. Oh, he's very wounded, but he's not dead. But yeah, I agree with you. That can feel a little bad. And especially because often, yeah, you know, I think in the moment, you're very surprised, right? You're like, oh God, he's dead, right? And your yeah. inclination, maybe you're not quick enough on your yeah. feet to go, oh, maybe he shouldn't be dead. Like I was thinking about the case of the dragon and the reason in Jason's game that this happened is the dragon has a location, a den somewhere in the forest, but he's also on the wandering monster chart. So just as you're bopping around the woods, he might just show up. And I think that's what happened to him. He just was just like, oh, here's the dragon. What do you know? Right
I
there.
I see. Got it.
Right.
Got it.
And so certainly you could say like, guys, we're in the first hour. It's way too early for the dragon to show up. Right. You could just, and you don't even have to tell your players, right. You roll in the chart and go reroll that. Right. That would be fairly easy to do.
Yes.
If you're worried about that. Likewise, I wonder if there are cases where you could say like, okay, well, we're going to have an encounter with the dragon, but I'm going to try and orchestrate some way for it to escape or not die or whatnot. Again, I feel like that side of it can start to feel very heavy handed, right? Now we're getting into the railroady space of like, I'm going to do an encounter with a dragon that you can't possibly win. That doesn't feel
good. Agreed. I'll say that I don't normally, me personally, I don't normally fudge numbers. I normally don't fudge statistics on the fly. And just kind of as I think about why I don't think I'd ever do that, A, I feel like I've committed to these statistics, and B, I don't think I would trust myself to, that's a kind of task that I want to analyze carefully pregame and then commit to. And so I tend not to do that. I will say that what I have done is I've modified encounter rolls, and a little lesson to myself fairly recently is if I roll an encounter that fundamentally doesn't fit at the moment, or I'm not happy about, don't blank it out, roll a different encounter. And I think I got in a habit of like maybe last year of just saying there was no encounter that happened, and then the world felt really empty. A lesson to myself is roll a different encounter.
I'm very cool with re-rolling on the wandering monster encounter table because sometimes it gives you gold and sometimes it gives you trash, and if you detect immediately, if your instinct is like, oh, that's not going to be fun, I see no reason to just mindlessly death march towards the not fun, right? Like just re-roll in the wandering.
Sometimes it just doesn't make sense. I mean, you're in a location where they've, you know, guarded their cave or whatever, and there's no way the thing could sneak up on them, or they're in the air and this is a ground-based monster, or, you know, there's a number, a wandering monster table is not comprehensively going to cover every situational factor.
Yeah.
So you gotta step in there, but I think it's better to have something happen than nothing.
Now, I think if I was in Jason's position where indeed the dragon is encountered right away and they kill it, I think my inclination then would be to do something similar to what you did, right? Of say like, well, you need to do A and B, right? Like, okay, well, maybe the dragon isn't the main thing, or maybe we need to know why the dragon was attacking or who instigated it. Maybe somebody's controlling it. Yeah. Let's add complexity on top of, right? Aha, you thought the dragon was the biggest thing in the adventure, but there's something else, something worse. You have to go deal with that.
You could make it a smaller mate. You could make it a smaller child or something like that.
Oh, geez, Sam, my brain was going the opposite direction of like, it is doing the bidding of an evil wizard, right? Or it's, it is the puppet of something even bigger and even worse.
I mean, that's a great hook for a campaign, right? If you know it's a campaign going on, then do that. Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't think like, again, if I was running this particular adventure and in the first hour the players killed the dragon and we still have 3 hours of gameplay, I have no problem saying like, yup, there's more to it than meets the eye. It's not just a rampaging dragon. There's something else and you got to figure it out.
Nice.
And maybe that's just because I know this adventure and I'm like, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot. I would be very easy for me to blame the dragon on some other thing that's going on in the woods.
You know, let me just throw out another thing that I deal with is when I am at conventions, I tend to run my Wizards Warzone sessions. And maybe the very first time I didn't realize how fast that is. So every player at the table gets one high level wizard. You have all the spells in classic D&D, and it's just a elimination tournament. Everybody's trying to terminate the other wizards. And it goes very rapidly. I have good players, so they rack up the kills fast. And what I realized was that happens so fast that I can actually put in multiple rounds within a standard convention block of 4 hours. Sometimes I can, depending on the players, like now I have enough data, depending on the players, I can usually fit either two or three. So if I know that's happening, then I'm careful to alert players to that fact. This could go very fast. And I tell them, you know, if you get eliminated, you're not entirely done playing. Feel free to take a break, but come back at this particular time and we're going to have another round where you get mm-hmm. you get to try again. So that's something that I do have to remember in my notes, because that goes so fast. I can play multiple games in a session.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, in a standard D&D game, I think that's very similar to saying, like, again, you know, you could just give them a peek behind the screen, sort of, metaphorically, yes. And just say, you did the thing. There's other stuff. You can go, we can have more adventures, guys. There's other things for you to do here. But just know that, like, yeah, that really was it. That really was the fun, exciting climax that you just did. More than
if I'm really at the top of my game, and I did manage to do this last time, I do like a teaser of like next time on our Star Frontiers game. And so last time I did wrap up like, oh, well, that part of the battle is over, and you're very quickly picked up and you're whisked away to another part of the battlefield where your alien friends are being attacked by a giant monster you've never seen before. And that's what's going to happen next time. And so I was pretty pleased by ending on that note. Like, well, nice. What is it? We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cliffhangers are great. I think that's anytime you can do that. So
I don't do that enough.
I was thinking about, like, again, in this is one of those, unfortunately, this is one of those situations, Dan, where, like, as we sit here and talk about it, I'm going to come up with a bunch of ideas that will be way better than what actually happened, right? Like, but for the most part, it's just a matter of how quick on your feet can you really think of something. One thought I had, honestly, was if they were going to go to this location, that is way more content than they could possibly do in half an hour. What I need to do is insert yet more content between them and it, right? Which is to say, introduce some other encounter, some other NPC, something that interrupts them on their way there that they can go do. Maybe a fun battle with a difficult, challenging monster that we can just say, like, oh, well, sorry you didn't make it to your destination. We have to end there, but at least you killed the what's it.
I get it. Yes. Okay. I follow. Yeah. Right. I get it. Yeah. Yes. I would tend to rely on the wandering monster table that I have, which is informing me about what the environment's like and things like that. So I would, if I had to do that, I might scan the wandering monster table for good suggestions in that vein.
That is, you know, another great use of the wandering monster table, right? You don't always have to necessarily roll. You can look at it and be like, which of these would be cool? What can I use here that would be fun?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm all for that.
I don't think I've done that to date, but it's not the worst. It's not the worst thing in the world.
Another note,
Paul,
I have to myself
ask,
here.
I
think more often than not, it's this case, right? We've talked a little bit about the case of like, oh gosh, they end too soon, but I feel like that's far less likely to happen. Way more often it's, oh no, we're going to go long. I have way more content than they can possibly do out of that.
Right.
Right. And as I think about that, I can't, I'm trying to give lead up here. Yeah. Yeah.
So
Dan. No, I'm just going to talk over you.
Sorry.
We must have just enough lag here to be stomping on each other. Okay, so where my head ends up is thinking about it, like most of the content of the game, apart from like if you have some big climactic, oh, there's going to be a big battle at the end, it's usually what it is, right? Some big boss that they have to fight. Everything leading up to that point is usually just about information, right? Like I feel like a lot of gameplay is around the players don't have enough information. They're trying to get information and they're exploring the world or whatnot, interacting with the world, and the DM is slowly filtering information out to them. And I think if you're cognizant of that as DM, one of the things you could do is say, ah, the problem here is that they have not gotten enough information fast enough. How do I give them more? Right?
Great.
So in this case, I feel like it would have been very easy for me. Again, they were someplace, they were at a point where they had some friendly NPCs around them. They were saying like, oh, we're going to go do this thing to go, you know, this will help us kill the dragon. We're going to go to this place. I could have easily had just an overly helpful NPC just show up and say like, yeah, that's a terrible idea. And here's why. Bump, 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 bump. Right? Just feed them information. Right? I don't have to, as DM, say, you guys, we don't have time to do this dungeon. I could just have an NPC show up and say, oh my gosh, my friend Bill went there, and you're not going to believe what he found. Let me tell you all about it.
Now, I got to say that, okay, to my brain, and perhaps other DM's brains, that feels heavy-handed and sloppy. On the other hand, players love it. In my experience, if an NPC shows up and just blurts out to the players the key piece of information that they've been scrapping for a while, in my experience, players just immediately love that character. They're like, "What? Oh, you've got to join our party because you are great. We love this character." So feel free with the solitary exception of our friend Max, who will usually say, "I don't believe it. That came too easy. That's going to be some kind of trap that they're leading us." So just right, exactly. Sort of like, you know, Gray Mouser style, which is fine. But that's actually a better idea than I think the first time somebody suggested it to me, because in my experience, players really react super positively when that happens.
I will admit, right, like the general technique of the overly helpful, overly well-informed NPC is one that I understand that reaction to, because I feel like I have that reaction to it too. But it is so good. Players always love that NPC. You should use that NPC. That NPC should show up in your
game
once in a while. Yeah. Not all the time. Once in a while, there should be an NPC who just seems to know way more than they should and is incredibly helpful.
I have a guy in my current campaign that was that was initially supposed to be the subject of the player's rescue party. And then when they finally found him, it turns out that he's way more resourceful and productive than the players themselves. And so he's and not only he's strategic, he's giving great tips, he's advising on like stuff. And the other thing, he's like, you guys can totally do this. You guys are great, and I'm so impressed by everything you're doing. Go out there and you get them, guys. And and in my mind, this is what a good leader looks like. The players are like, boy, that guy's great. We need to. We're so glad that guy's around. He's wonderful.
You know, I think that's, unfortunately, as DMs, we often do look at the things we're presenting to the players, whether they're NPCs or combat encounters, as challenges for the players. Everything's a challenge for the players. It's okay to help them sometimes.
Yes.
I don't know. All right.
It is. It's actually literally surprising relief. Where normally we have to like pull these things out like teeth and just drops in our lap. They feel really good about that. It's a really nice little gift. It's a real nice change of pace.
Yeah, but don't overdo it.
Now, Paul, I gotta ask, at the outset, I've seen more than, like, thinking again, why do sessions go long? I've seen more than one person talk recently about, I've had a session of my D&D game and the players never made it out of town. And they were shopping, they went into the different shops, they haggled for better prices, they chatted with the NPCs, they had a hour-long debate about what their strategy should be. And I think among people who said this on our Discord server, just I think this morning, Mr. Jordan said that he had a session basically like that. And so let's say you're in such a simple situation, you're playing classic D&D, you start in a town, there is a dungeon, and the players never say the words, we go to the dungeon. How heavy-handed would DM be in that circumstance?
I advise against being heavy-handed in that situation. I'm immediately reminded of another story I heard of a guy who set up a big war game campaign, had all his miniatures set out, right? We're going to do this giant war game. But before we get to that, Before we do that, we're all going to pretend to be important people in the town, and we're going to just do this little bit of like play acting where we talk about, you know, the battle that's about to come. And then they spent the whole time doing that, and they never played the war game, right? And of course, Dan is laughing because he knows I'm describing Braunstein, the basically the origin of D&D that many people claim to be the origin of D&D, right? That is exactly how Braunstein happened. You might accidentally invent the next best thing, right? I don't know. Don't stop that from happening. But also, like, recognize that, like, there's a lot of fun in role-playing games that are other things than pursuing the goals that are set out to the party, right? Like, the players are invested in exploring the world. They're invested in discovering their own character, right? Like, a lot of times that, like, we're stuck in town and we're just haggling with shopkeepers and talking to each other and talking to NPCs. Well, that's really often because the player is exploring their own character. They're trying to establish their character, figure them out, and roleplay them more and whatnot. And that is in itself fun. If your players are having fun doing that, I'm disinclined to stop them.
I'm going to politely offer the counter argument. And I'll say if they're really having a great time, and okay, I think I've been in a number of circumstances where, I don't know, 5 out of 6 people at the table, you can kind of feel they're kind of grinding their teeth a little bit about, like, this kind of feels like it's not going anywhere. And so particularly for brand new players, if you're introducing new people into this hobby for the first time and they're not experienced and they don't know how to drive the large amount of agency that's available to them, then the dungeon format has a strength to it specifically because of the limited number of options. You got to go through this door or climb down that pit or go down that hallway. And that provides some focus to beginning players making their choices. So the other option, and I would personally take this as the old school D&Der, is you can buy equipment off this list. We're not role-playing the haggling. Here's a list. Pay your expenses, get your stuff, pick your spells, and then you're now in the dungeon.
Yeah.
And saw Bill Webb do that with us, right? He said, again, he had a large party, right? We were playing with like 25 people. We didn't have time to haggle for all the equipment. And he said, you go there, there's a horrible well. It says, you must not go down the well. You say, screw it. You go down the well anyway. You're in the dungeon. Here's the 3 corridors you can pick from. And I would tend to fall in that direction myself.
Hard framing is not bad, right? Like, I think that kind of, like, especially if you just want to get to the action of the game, that's how you start. I have no problem with that. I enjoy in media res. I enjoy, you met in town, you did your stuff. We're not going to deal with that. We're not going to play that out. You're at the entrance of the dungeon. Let's go. If that's the game that you're playing, for sure. The haggling thing, okay. I understand how sometimes you can get accidentally drawn down that. If it's important and interesting aspect of the game and we're talking about things that are not on the normal equipment list, then it's right, and the NPCs that you're interacting with are there for more reasons than to just sell you equipment, then I don't want to get in the way of that necessarily, right? Because that we're role-playing out something that is actually interesting. But if it is, and this is part of this, is just keeping a pulse on the table, right? Like you said, if you were looking around the table and 6 out of 8 people are rolling their eyes, wondering when the heck this is going to end, and the other two are bickering over the cost of a dagger. Yeah, jump in there. Make something happen. But it's not always haggling, right? Sometimes it's like we're planning about what we should do. We're discussing what we should do. Or we're interacting with an NPC. We're talking, we're trading stories about this NPC's backstory, and we're digging into irrelevant details about them or whatnot. Here's another option. Attack the town. Bad guys, they're not going to wait. Send in the dragons.
I have, let me see, William. William suggested the same a couple weeks ago. A couple minutes ago. I got to carefully track time or my episode is senseless. I tend to not, I will confess, a little cliche to me. A little, is not my fondest thing. I might be a little bit more meta about, and say, look, gang, I'm gonna move you to the adventure because that's what we've got prepped and that's what we're planning. And I will say that one of my worst sessions is when I didn't do that. So a couple of years ago, we had a session at our house con where the players are running a domain and then they're also gonna go out and they're gonna personally adventure. And a couple people were really into the strategizing about the domain finances, and that debate went on and on and on, and it delayed getting the adventuring part that other people wanted to. And I failed to take the reins of that, and it was one of the worst sessions I've ever run. So I made a mental note to try to get better about that. But I tend to, I'm not super fanned of the monsters attack the town, frankly. But if that works, if that works for you, more power to you.
It depends on the setting and the adventure you're playing and whatnot, yeah. Right? Like, I'm of course well framed here in the Black Worm of Brandensford, where we know the town is being terrorized by a dragon, and nobody leaves the gates of the town anymore because there's a terrible dragon out there. Heck, it makes a lot of sense in that story for the dragon to just show up. Why wouldn't he?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Why not? Just send them.
Now there's a strategic question about that. About is that better? Is that strategically better for the players to be able to set up their defenses against the dragon than be in the dragon's lair fighting it? So I start to have this question about, like, if that becomes a thing that the players know about, are they is that actually incentivizing to sit on their ass and play a defense game rather than an offense game?
Yeah. I think I would be inclined to try and push it in the other direction, make it less, like, strategically worse. You guys spent so much time futzing around, getting nothing done. No one prepared anything. No one ever thought the town would get attacked by the dragon. They thought they were all safe. Here it is. Everybody's running around. There are no defenses. It's terrible. People are dying left and right. Gosh, it would have been better if you had gone out to the woods and killed the thing out there.
Fair.
But again, it's like I said, I think it's very dependent on the content, right? Like, if you're in, like, this is a well-established safe area, the players are known that this is, it's okay for them to be here. There's no expectation of an immediate attack by an invading force. I don't know. It could be more subtle than the dragon attacks, right? Like, I don't know. Somebody gets attacked in a back alley as you're walking about. Oh, you're all in the marketplace. Everybody's distributed. Your party isn't together. You know, a secret assassin attacks somebody in an alley. Anything you can do to just like bring, you know, the players. My point of sort of attack the town is get out of the mindset that the players have to initiate all the action. The bad guys can initiate action. Try to figure out what kind of action they would initiate.
Do you feel that like let's say you're playing a West Marches campaign as an example. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that advice runs counter to the players drive everything philosophy and they decide where to adventure type things? Would that not be an issue?
A little bit, but again, we're talking about an extreme situation, right? Where the players are not driving anything, right? Where they're and usually it's a couple of them, right? It's just some specific players. It's not the whole party, right? Some people are just sitting around passively waiting for this annoying part to end, and other people are excited about it for whatever reason and just obsessed with it, just focused on it. So they're going down this dark alley of, you know, infinite recursive discussion about the cost of a dagger or whatever it is. You know, I think you're in a bad spot, right? You're correcting for we've ended up someplace bad. How do I fix this? We've already failed to initiate action, right?
This is an interesting place where I think you and I tend to run in slightly different directions on this. And when we co-DM'd at least once, we've butted heads on exactly this issue. And, you know, it's actually some folks on our Discord server were saying the same thing as you, is if they're stuck in town, now I've got town encounters to make things happen. And I feel like you tend to make new things happen where they are, and I tend to prefer to move them to where I've got stuff prepared if I need to. Mm-hmm. Which is an interesting, and that's one where we kind of consistently have slightly different instincts about.
it's interesting to boil it down to that basic of do the player's move or does the action move. It feels to me like it's just an extension of like, what do you do if the players camp in the dungeon? Players camp in the dungeon, the monsters attack. Monsters aren't just sitting in the dungeon waiting for players to show up, right? I do not like that kind of Murder at the Zoo style adventure where you like the rust monsters are in this room just waiting for someone to show up. Why?
I think I don't hate it as much as other people, and I will say that I, you know, again, what is part of that threat of the West Marches is I don't let people camp out in the dungeon. And I will confess that in the core traditional rule D&D rule books, they actually do hold that out as an option. But I do have a structural element where I do want the players back at town, as we've said before, for a number of reasons. And that's another reason where I don't want to arbitrarily fuck up the town. Because yep. It's going to screw up my structure for just how I run the overall campaign, and I don't want to, on a whim, screw up the town just because it's the first thing that occurs to me in a particular session to keep it interesting.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know. I guess I feel like there's just so much room in here to interpret and do different things, right? Again, if you're worried about the structural integrity of the town or the safety level of the town, I think it's still easy to have a specific ne'er-do-well show up or an unfortunate event. Bad stuff happens all the time. There's no reason that the players should have complete 100% safety just because they happen to be in town.
I've had people from the mega dungeon. I've had enemies from the mega dungeon chase them to town and show up later out on trying to get back a particular thing as a result of their actions. It's not crazy talk, but it's slightly different in things. Now let's talk about stuff that we agree with. So you have, I think when you were running Skull Mountain, in addition to abbreviating the end, you also abbreviated entire levels. I think there were entire like cavern levels of the dungeon that I think you skipped over in the last one or two sessions. How far out in advance did you know you were going to do that?
I didn't, but also I have experience chopping up and redistributing the parts of that dungeon, right? Because my previous use of that dungeon was to hack it to pieces and reuse pieces of it in different places, right? So I'm looking at that dungeon, I know like, okay, well this is a great set encounter and this is a great set encounter and you need kind of these levels to build up to it. And this stuff here is just transition, just moves you from this interesting action to that interesting action. So already like I kind of knew the major chunks and parts of it that were fun, how to lift pieces in and out of it. I definitely knew that the adventure was going to be way too long for the weekend. I knew that for sure.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how much you would get through. Right. So I thought it's entirely possible they just played the first three levels of the dungeon. Right. The whole weekend could just become about, you know, which I was absolutely prepared for. What I wasn't prepared for was the, I'm sure he's fine. Let's go back to town and spend a day in town. I'm like, oh, well, he was right. And this is my anti. This is where I get really anxious about that, like, you know, Murder at the Zoo. Like, so he's just like in stasis in this position of like, he's just been captured and he's being held in this temporary space until he's moved down later. And he's in that state until the players discover him. Like, that just doesn't feel right. The players then decide, well, we're going to go back to town and have a nice meal and go to sleep and come back tomorrow. Why would he still be there? It just doesn't, it's illogical. And I feel like I would have trouble presenting that as a DM to be like, oh yeah, here he is. He's been sitting in this room for 3 days waiting for to be transitioned down to for sacrifice. Why? That's crazy.
I tend to be, and I'll say that so it's certainly a situation where you've got intelligent opponents, people or you know what have you, making counter plans. I think that's actually fine. I think cases where I kind of don't care about that issue is when you've got unintelligent monsters. Like, frankly, rust monsters is an example of like, yeah, they don't know how to get through a door. They will actually just sit in that room effectively indefinitely, and I'm not going to worry about, maybe they're on the wandering monster, I'm not going to worry about where the rust monsters go and set up a breeding colony. So for what it's worth, my instinct is to have things on a tempo of weeks. And I mean, you know, having somebody sit in a jail for a couple days before being transferred to a prison is actually happens all the time. So it would actually be an option.
It's not a jail though, right? The room he's in is like a meeting room with a table and chairs, and he's just bound up sitting in a chair waiting for the people to come pick him up. Have him there for days. Like, that introduces whole problems of like, well, do we have to feed him? And like, what are the entrances and egresses to this room? How secure is it? And it asks way too many questions, I feel like, for the setup of that.
Interesting.
The adventure definitely assumes the players are going to, in one day, you know, in a matter of hours, in fact, reach the spot.
Yeah. Interesting. I might have to look at the specific
design of the adventure, right? Maybe you could point out that, like, oh, you know, you're kind of setting up this plot point, if you will, of like, this thing must happen, otherwise the rest of the adventure falls apart, and that is disappointing. And I don't feel bad, honestly, about it being like, great, well, you know, this is the consequences of you deciding not to push on, right?
To
back out and regroup. The consequences are he's been moved someplace harder to reach.
Valid, right? Of course, valid. Yep. I think in my last campaign, the campaign that I'm currently wrapping up, I've had situations whereby the players maybe left somebody behind, or there was a vulnerability. I guess there was like there was an opening to get into a place that they declined to go to. And in my notes, I said they're going to have one session availability. If in the next session they go and do this, they can still get in there easily. And if it's a second session, then the opponents find out about it, close it up, ask for more allies. So I tend to, and I guess my instinct has been to give the players one session opportunity to make up for it. But what you're saying is 100% valid. Completely reasonable.
That's fascinating to me. I think like that, like tying it to real world time is potentially an issue for me, because in one session can be one day of game time and it can be a month of game time, right? Depending on if the players, you know, just keep pushing their luck and just like, nope, we got to go. Time is of the essence. Or if they decide like, oh, you know, let's go spend a week in town and just relax.
Interesting. I think I knew what the tempo was in this particular situation. So I don't think that was a particular issue this time. I think I knew all my sessions were running a couple days. You know what? Okay, let me. I'm forgetting about the image that I prepped, Paul. Do you have access to the feature image that I made?
Not only do I not have access, Dan, but we are out of time. We are 5 minutes here to the end of the show, and I have not said that. I didn't realize you had an image. I'm sorry. Hold it up to your camera. Okay. Go for it.
Okay. Yeah. So a little hint is on my, so this is one of the session log sheets that I keep in my Star Frontiers campaign. This is actually from last year. And a little thing that I do is I actually, for each like encounter, here it is over here. It's over here. I keep a time of when the encounter ended. And then after the fact, I go and I actually see how many minutes did that encounter take. And so I kind of use this like we would in the software industry for a post-mortem. And I feel like by tracking this, I get a little bit better understanding of the tempo, like I'm talking about, of how long does this kind of encounter or this kind of session last? And hopefully I get better knowledge going forward about how I can pace my game. So I think I have gotten better as a result of kind of logins. I also do it in the classes that I teach, for what it's worth. And then when I just pulled this out most of the times, and what I realized is at the bottom of this sheet from that particular session, I wrote after the fact, I wrote critique, the corridor fight went too long. And what I realized was that I'd made a rule error. Is in this particular fight, they didn't have any weapons, they were fighting barefisted, and in the Star Frontiers rules, what I realized afterwards is that everybody's supposed to get two unarmed attacks per round, and I was only giving them one. So the whole fight was lasting twice as long as it was supposed to. And then in the little circle, here it is, little circle after, a day later, I said, here's a possible resolution that says, if a fight in the future goes longer than 30 minutes, have the monster flee. It might be a broken encounter, or I might be using the wrong rule like I did here, and I have to go look up the proper rule later on. So I didn't intend for that to be on this particular page, but it's something I have absolutely dealt with, and I'm continually trying to come up with ideas to be on the watch out for that, even in this current campaign I'm running.
That's great. That's good stuff. And there's a part of me that's curious about, like, how much of that is actually tied to, like, is that only valuable if you run the exact same encounter again? That's certainly valuable if you're, you know, playtesting a thing or running an adventure you're likely to rerun. That's huge. Versus how much of that is applicable to just the general case of kind of those bigger lessons of, for these types of encounters, try to remember these rules or here are outs for yourself.
That was my intent here, was to make that kind of a general principle. And you notice that I do bring it back to real world time again. So I have a tendency to do that. So my wandering monster checks in D&D are tied to real world time. This idea here, abbreviate a fight if it goes past 30 minutes, was the idea there. I haven't completely stuck that. Or giving my players like one beat in the campaign if something can possibly get countered by the enemies. So I tend to think about the real world time myself. That won't work for everybody.
Yeah, I've never kept specific discrete notes like that about how long individual encounters take or whatnot. But what I do generally, I will say, when I'm running a game, I usually have my phone sitting next to me on the table with the clock showing so that I can keep an eye on it and know exactly how far into it, how much time do we have left. I think, you know, knowing where you are and how, like, that's why I had that moment of panic in my game where I said, oh no, they're about to go do this thing and I can see there's 30 minutes left. That definitely isn't going to work. We all know that's not going to work.
Remember that when we had our guest Satine Phoenix on, which is amazingly like 4 years ago now to my horror, she recommended a trick whereby before your convention game even starts, jot down like where you expect to be on each hour. Like, what are the tentpole scenes you get to plan it out? And then you can detect even in the first hour if you're running long and start modifying it before you get into that last half hour. And I thought that was really top notch. But viewers should go watch the Satine Phoenix episode because she had a lot of good advice like that.
Dan, we are super over now, so I have to call us. You have any final thoughts on pacing when games go too long or too short?
Good for you, sir. I'm still dealing with this. This is one of the things that as DMs is so important. Paul and I, you and I both agree that pacing is among maybe the number one issues of a good role-playing session. So developing your toolkit, there's no particular silver bullet, but developing your toolkit and being meta aware of the real time at the start, at the finish, in the way keeping your eye on the clock, that's just the beginning of just being aware of this as an issue. And then you have a whole lot of tools. You know, be bold as a DM. I would say be bold. Take control of the session. Decide what you want to see. Ultimately, you're the auteur, and you can make the session go where you want it to if it's completely adrift. And I would encourage, the bolder that I've gotten about that, and the more honest with your players, I think the better things have gone for me.
Yeah, I generally agree with you there, Dan. I think that you know, there's a balance for sure. There's a touch that you have to develop in finding ways to be bold without just beating the players over the head and making them feel like they've been completely railroaded into some predetermined outcome, right? So there's definitely be on the watch for that. But I wish I could list out, oh, well, just do X, Y, and Z, and that won't happen. And like you said, I think there's no silver bullet here. There's no, you know, and it's unfortunately a problem that is, I know it when I see it. And other than that, I can't really give great advice on how to not accidentally railroad your players.
Yeah. I would say find a place where there's interesting choices. Get them to a place where there's interesting choices.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Viewers, if you have thoughts on other techniques that you can use or other situations you would love to hear us talk about, if there are specific scenarios you are in where something was going too long or too short for some specific reason and you don't know how to get out of it, leave us a comment here in the YouTube video comment section. We would love to hear from you. Maybe that'll spin up yet another conversation about pacing. I feel like, Dan, we're going to be talking about pacing a lot. We already have for the past 7 seasons. I'm sure we will talk about it for many seasons to come.
I bet you're right. And I'll remind our viewers that you can remember to like, follow, and subscribe to us on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, TikTok, Loops. We're on GitHub. We have the handle Wandering DMs on all the sites. So please look for us there and chop up that like button.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can find those podcasts on our website at wanderingdms.com. You can also find us on various podcast carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Pocket Cast. If you are listening to this show right now on one of those other sites and it offers the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And of course, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. Every tier gets you access to our private Discord server where the conversation continues around the clock 24/7. We just have the smartest, wisest patrons with all kinds of great ideas to solve problems like pacing in your fantasy games and your science fiction games like I run and your miniature war games and all kinds of stuff like that. So we would love to see you there. And like Paul said at the top of the hour, we will be there in about 10 minutes to continue the conversation, hear more of your ideas in the live video after chat. So we would love to see you there and get some more direct feedback about your thoughts of pacing things. Paul, we did have so much to say about pacing that we went a little bit over today. didn't quite get the timing writing right on this particular episode. So we thank our patrons for their patience and their avid viewership. Next weekend is Thanksgiving weekend. Hope everybody has a good holiday. We will be here on Sunday. We'll be here on Sunday for leftovers from Thanksgiving. So we'll look forward to seeing you here again next week. And don't forget, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.